Excelsior Spider-Man fans, welcome to another spectacular episode of the Spectacular Webs Podcast, right here on Podmatic.com. Of course, I'm your host, Thomas Mattis, and I am here with my fellow PIC, as my good friend Jesse Garrett would put it, partner in crime, Donna Mark. Donna Mark, how are you tonight?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Tonight, we will be covering episode 8 of the Spectacular Webs podcast entitled Reaction. So, before we get to the episode and the short recap, we actually do have a little fan feedback to talk about on our forum space. Listener Spiderpool279 had two questions for Don. So, Don, are you ready?
Yes.
Do you have your lifelines ready?
Well, let's see if I need them.
The first question is, how does it feel to be a sidekick?
Well, you know, Spider-Pool, I like to think that both me and Thomas are both equal opportunity podcast hosts where, you know, he carries half the slack, I carry half the slack, and we got each other's back, so,
yeah.
There you go.
I mean, it's not like Jesse Garrett, who's basically my Jason Todd. His second question is, how do you get tongue, not to mention anime app, every episode? I'm shocked. And this will be the last question we bring up from Spiderpool279.
I was going to say, well, you know, we've been pretty focused last few episodes, but now that you brought that back into his consciousness, expect every episode to mention Gurren Lagann and, you know,
why would I mention an anime that I absolutely despise?
Oh, I don't know.
Unless you want me to turn it into something to the equivalent of Michael Bailey's Superman rant.
We've already had our rant, so we want to spare the listeners some madness.
No, we haven't had that rant yet. That's a rant that's going to have a lot of language, but this is not the place, or will it ever be the place for that? So,
we'll wait until episode 12.
But moving on, we're going to now go over a short recap, which I do believe Don has ready. So Don, if you would go with the recap.
Okay, this episode is entitled Reaction, Episode 8. Aha, you see what they did there. The enemy is Dr. Octopus. This episode opens up with Spider-Man still trying to find the Green Goblin from the last episode. He's still hunting for him. And he runs into, like, these carjackers who've stolen this, you know, like, you know what? Is there a word for that, like, kind of thing that carries cars?
A carrier.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, the kind of car pilot vehicle.
So well, it's a truck. It's a truck and it has a carrier.
Yeah. He stops them, but one of the guys tries to flee back and ends up cutting, like, the brake line. So Spider-Man has to basically do the Spider-Man 2 move to use his body and his web lines to slow it down. He does, and he's off to school. Meanwhile, back at, it is Oscorp. Yeah, Oscorp. Norman Osborn has gotten so desperate that he's even using the doctor to try to become a supervillain to fight Spider-Man. So he pretty much forces, Dr. Otto Octavius to use his mechanical arms to start. I don't know what he's intending to do, but,
I don't know if it was so much that he was forcing him as he had a conversation, Norman left, and then Dr. Octavius went to perform some type of experiment, and he made sure that the safety was off, to which the Green Goblin then comes in and starts it while he's trapped in there.
Yeah. Honestly, I have the impression that he was trying to start, he was like, please, Mr. Osborn, let me do this. But, Thomas is right. That's what happens. Spider-Man sees this from afar, does the web-sling move from Spider-Man 1, flies into Oscorp as well as Norman Osborn and some co-workers. They fish Osborn out of the debris, but unfortunately, this little thing has kind of fused the tentacles to his spine. So Octavius comes out and is...
Spider-Man 2.
Yeah. We'll get into it.
But we'll get into it. That's the last we'll talk about movies for right now until we get into that.
Yeah, just don't be surprised if I mention things from other movies in this recap. So basically, Octavius comes out and is pretty vengeful against Osborn, and he's even vengeful against Spider-Man, which, again, we'll talk about. So he starts attacking everybody, but his power source from the from his tentacles runs out. So he says, "You know, another time, Spider-Man." So he flees then. So Spider-Man now has two supervillains he needs to catch up. Elsewhere, I didn't mention this before, but Midtown High has won a football game thanks to Harry Osborn. He made the last save touchdown. So Gwen was waiting for him outside the classroom, but I don't know how long she was waiting, but eventually she found Harry, like, unconscious on the ground. She's like, Harry, what's going on? What's going on? He's, you know, Gwen, babe, everything's all right. So he's really kind of like the shady, you know, is he using substance abuse or whatever kind of situation. So what's going on with Harry? Meanwhile, we go back to Dr. Octavius's house, which he despises himself and says that he needs to find a power source to defeat Spider-Man. And then he sees a picture of his old boss and decides to go back to an experiment he was working on, apparently, before he was working with Osborn.
Not to cut you off there, Don, but he kind of also forgot what was happening during the football game. A little interaction with Mary Jane and Liz Allen with Peter.
Oh, how could I forget that? I'm sorry. How could I forget that small scene with Mary Jane?
It is kind of important to sort of the B-plot of what happens in the episode.
I'm not going to disagree with you. Basically, Peter shows up and says, "Hey, Mary Jane, I thought we hit it pretty good at the dance." She says, "Well, slow down, Tyre. You know, we're cool. We're just friends.
We're not doing anything primitive like dating."
Yeah, that good quip. So basically, we go from the next day where basically the entire high school gang is at Coney Island chilling. Gwen really wants Peter's help to talk to Harry because Harry's being really elusive. But Liz comes up, and you know, she starts hanging out with Peter. They kind of make a date of the day, but they run into Flash and Mary Jane. Before punches are thrown, they see Dr. Octopus kind of going across the city to go to his old boss's building. So Peter makes a lame excuse to become Spider-Man, try to track him down. And the rest of the episode is basically him playing keep away from the power source with Dr. Octopus. At one point, Dr. Octopus grabs Liz in the excitement and threatens her life so he can get the power source. So Spider-Man manages to save Liz and keep him away from the power source, knock him out, and the police arrest him. At the very end, because of what happened earlier with Mary Jane and Peter, Flash and Liz break up, and Harry is still being elusive with Gwen. We see him swallowing the goblin green from the last episode, while Hammerhead and Osborn talk about this mysterious green goblin who keeps spoiling their plans. I'd like to say the end, but it's really more of a sort of the end question mark, aka to be continued. We don't know what's going
to
happen.
To be continued next episode on Friday.
Tune in, brother. Hope me is going to run wild. So thoughts on reaction?
You know, this was a very good setup episode. For last episode was a great beginning to this arc. This was a great setup to what's going to happen in the finale of the arc. And really, that's what it is. It's a filler episode.
I had problems with this episode.
as anybody who has heard Don or read Don's review in the past on the Spider-Man crawl space of this episode would already know.
Yeah, actually, I would like to say that I will say that some opinions have changed since then. I didn't give it a slight.
Your version of Don's review may vary from region to region.
It was right on. I still have problems with it though, and we'll get to it as we go along.
Let's go towards our normal regular quibbage. Let's start with music. Let's talk about the sort of the mad scientist theme of Doc Ock. I don't know if you caught that theme. It was like the theme, like when he was doing the experiment, that type of music. I don't know to you, but it kind of sounded like sort of a mad scientist theme to me.
Was that the scene where he kind of like flashed? He kind of hallucinated, seeing he was going to attack Norman Osborn.
Well, it was after that when he was in the experiment and he got locked in.
You know, I didn't notice it, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was. So I didn't notice it, but
I mean, it was around that same area, so.
So but, I trust it was good.
It not even does good, but it sounded like a mad scientist theme. Like, I thought it was kind of clever considering what was about to happen with Dr. Octopus. It sounded very creepy, and it was very appropriate for what was happening to him. Spider-Man 2. Again, we're not to that point yet.
But we'll get there.
But really, the only other music point to talk about was the cliche teenager love theme, and I have here talk, but I also have in parentheses make fun of, because really that's how cliche it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's good music, but it is like, you know, typical CW, you know.
16 you know, candles.
Yeah. And actually, honestly, I've seen this episode several times, but I was kind of expecting like a record skip, like tearing the needle off the record once they met up with Flash and Mary Jane, but sadly that didn't happen.
You're waiting for that moment, like Peter Parker screws up and she has that memory.
Yeah, like the first episode when he tries to ask out Sally, that kind of thing.
Like, followed by, wah, wah, wah.
Not that interesting, but we both agree that the music was cheesy. It's not bad, it's just cheesy.
Yeah, so, but yeah, it's very cheesy. Yeah, I kind of like that, but I did kind of like that it's funny that they're in a haunted house, and then they have the squirt game, and he wipes her face off with a mask. You know, hey, Peter's stupid like that.
Well, yeah, at one point I thought that was really dumb of him, but I did like that. I thought that was kind of funny.
I mean, how does somebody not notice that, hey, he's wiping my face with a mask?
We could easily say, hey, I won this when you weren't looking, but that would never fly.
That's kind of like the same type of thought process that leads people to think that, hey, Peter could have snuck into the party last episode, even though the thugs had it all closed off. Are you still sticking by that argument?
Why not?
Let's move on to animation. First, let's talk about Dr. Octopus's design. Obviously, as we're going to get to in our next point, though.
Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, I mean, this is obviously not the classic comic book design, and, you know, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing.
I'm not going to say I don't like it. I think that it's, I think it's weird that, like, instead of sunglasses, he has, like, these weird kind of, like, optical lenses just on his eyes. I think that's kind of interesting.
He has very thin frames.
Well, it was just interesting. I will say, I do like the fact that he has black tints. I think that's pretty cool. I think it's very cool. It's like a design choice.
Yeah, I found it cool. I mean, I really didn't notice that they were, I noticed they were black, but I didn't really think anything of them being black.
They close up on them a couple of times.
Yeah. I mean, again, I know that tentacles were black color. I just really didn't think anything of them being black. That didn't really raise into my mind. But again, like we said, one thing we've been making a joke constantly so far is all the movie references. Should we go over them now?
You want to?
I mean, we obviously have the opening scene, which is straight out of the subway chase from Spider-Man 2.
I guess if you want to use it, you want to use it in Dr. Octopus episode, but yeah. I just thought it was gratuitous. I was like, hey, remember this?
But you have basically Doc Ock, the harness, melting
into his neck.
Yeah, you have the Spider-Man 2 outfit of Dr. Ock. As is where, what else came from the movie?
Spider-Man slinging into the Oscorp was from Spider-Man 1. He's like, oh no, I'm too far away. Wait a minute. And it was cool. I'm not saying it wasn't cool, but it was still kind of derivative.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, it was different though. I mean, yeah, it's sort of the same idea, but it was different. You know, in the movie, he sort of puts two different webs on, I guess they're like flagpoles. He then stretches like down the building, and so it's more of a it's a different
type. I was going to say real quick that he actually does that in Spider-Man 2. Remember when Doc Ock has Aunt May, he does it out the window.
Oh yeah. Okay, I was thinking more Spider-Man 1, but yeah, there's also. But you know what? It is the same thing he does in Spider-Man 1, where he zips. He does two separate lines to the wall, and then he goes back, and then he lets it fling him. Whereas here, this is more of a traditional slingshot.
I mean. Well, before I rant, what did you think about, like, all of the references?
I had no problem with them. I mean, considering that, I mean, really, when you consider the fact that, for the most part, in most of the episodes so far, it's just been one after another references to Ditko and Romita Jr. in the early days of Spider-Man. You know, it's been nice to see a couple of references here and there to Ultimate and to the movies.
I'm not going to say that any references to movies are inappropriate. I think there's a way to do them, and like they could have had a movie reference in here. Having what five or four is kind of like I think A, you're calling people who aren't familiar with Spider-Man stupid, And yeah, it annoys, you know, geeky nerds like you and me who are like, you know, well, it wasn't in the comics. And it's not even really that. It's just, to me, it stopped the show to remind us that it was in the, I think the worst offender was the truck thing in the beginning. Cause that was so bloody obvious it was from Spider-Man 2. The thing melting to his neck was obvious because they kind of zoom in on that. The brown jacket is more of a nod, and the sling thing I think kind of moved the story along. But I think like half the references were a little unnecessary.
Well, I have a question. How does it say that people who aren't necessarily fans and up on the history are stupid? Because I didn't get that from them putting that in there.
Well, this is my interpretation. It's not something that I think. It's a little more personal interpretation, but I think that the idea is that, well, these people who are not familiar with the comics, they'll remember it from watching the movie. So they'll say, hey, that was from the movie. I like this. And it's kind of just, it's like making Selena Kyle blonde because she was blonde in Batman Returns and everything. It's kind of along the lines of that, where they're kind of taking the audience and putting them in a.
So you're dishing Batman the Animated Series right now?
I'm not Disney Batman the Animated Series because they didn't want to do it. They were forced to do that. But this one was, from what I understand, a choice of their own volition. And I think that they could have made a better choice. But that's just my opinion. That's just, you know, people can disagree.
Well, the last thing we'll talk about with animation is we're going to talk about the balance of light and darkness in this arc. Now, okay, I'm going to say something. This has been my personal fault. In the past two episodes, I haven't brought up sort of color scheme and that stuff as I had done in the past, and I mostly put the blame on the fact that, you know, I've been so caught up in what's been happening in the actual story that I really didn't take notice of the color scheme. But I went back and I looked back to previous episodes to look back at the color scheme specifically, because I can't speak, and, you know, really, again, as I was saying with that second arc, it was getting lighter, and it was all more obvious in that episode 6 with the entire thing taking place during day. As opposed, so it was definitely a reflection of from the beginning of that arc to that episode 6, which was the end of that arc, going from dark to light, being that in episode 4, all the fights were in night, and by episode 6, all of them were in day, and I'm sure I've lost Don here.
No, I'm not. Well, you're about to. Okay. Episode 6, the Wagner episode, that took place during the day. That very same day, later in the night, was the Green Goblin episode. Are you trying to say that was supposed to culminate the conclusion of that previous arc?
I'm saying episode 6 culminated the previous arc, which was 4, 5, and 6. And if you look at that, you know, it slowly gets brighter, at least color scheme wise. Which we talked about. If you go back to episodes 4 and 5, you hear me talk about that.
I didn't buy it then.
But and this one, I would say that for a color scheme, it's a balance of light and dark. Things that take place during night aren't too dark, and things that take place during day aren't too bright. And there seems to be a very good balance between things.
Well, actually, I will agree with you on that. I'm not saying I agree with it, like, thematically, but that's absolutely true. Like, especially, I think for all my gripes with this episode, it has really, really good animation. And there's a lot of shadows and lights and, blacks and darks that kind of add to the detail. I think you're absolutely right on that. I'm not sure if I see any thematic correlation with it, but I will agree that that's certainly there, in terms of the animation.
It's actually pretty shocking to hear you agree with me there, Don. Let's actually take that good thing and move on to story. Let's talk about the difference between this Dr. Octopus and the one in the comics.
Well, just look at the movie and you'll see the difference. Wah, wah, wah.
But I think you had things to say about Dr. Octopus, at least your feeling of this version, and how you sort of hated. If I remember right, it was because he was a good guy and now he's a bad guy.
Yeah, and it resonates with me more in my mind because of the new show I'm on, ladies and gentlemen, with Bertone and John Wilson, Amazing Spider-Man Classics. Well, we went over ASM.
Hey, we don't pimp till later.
Well, this doesn't have a point. I'm not stroking my own ego, but we went over the first appearance of Dr. Octopus, and that one, he was like from the comics, he was a scientist who kind of loses his mind after the accident. That's absolutely true. But with this one, it was like he was diminutive, he was kind of wimpy and simpering, and then immediately after the accident, I think what they were trying to do was kind of build up like this kind of long brewing hatred and yearning to be more, but it didn't work for me because there was none of that. Like, you didn't see that prior until this episode after the accident. And some people will say that, well, he was hallucinating attacking the Osborn, but that was when he had the tentacles, and the tentacles are the one things that changed. I think that they kind of put all their eggs in one basket in this episode, and I'm not sure I cared for it personally.
Well, I kind of like the fact that there was a connection to the past episodes of the series, and the fact that you had this sort of underlying, I don't know if we should call it hatred, but anger towards Osborn and him being picked on by Osborn brewing through the episodes. And so I like that connection. I think, because again, remind me if I'm wrong, you know, he actually was a good scientist that was trying to do good in the comics, in his original origin, and then the accident happened, and he sort of went crazy with it.
Well, honestly, that's something that's been kind of like gone back and forth with people, different writers. Some people say that this is goes along with like the differing interpretations of Dr. Octopus, like currently. Like, he's either a good guy with specific aspirations, or he's a straight up bad guy, or he's a goofy guy, and it's never 100% consistent. And I think that you're right. There is definitely a reason for him to not like IS Osborn. But my thing is that he drops that immediately and goes after Spider-Man out of convenience. Like, yeah. He sees Osborn and says, well, I don't like you, Osborn, but Spider-Man! Spider-Man had nothing to do with what happened to him, and he's never expressed a hatred towards Spider-Man in the episodes prior when we first saw him. So I thought that was kind of another case of, you know, just kind of making him out and out evil without really setting him up as such. And I know that he turns insane, but his hatred towards Spider-Man is so irrational. It goes from saying he's insane to just kind of being stupid and convenient for the plot.
Well, here's the thing, though. Were you a little shocked that Spider-Man didn't question, hey, why is this guy saying that I've, like, ruined his plans for the last time and I tried to kill him?
Didn't he say that? He said, I remember when he held both Osborn and Spider-Man with his tentacles. Against the wall, folks. Don't use your sick imagination with that sentence. But
that means you, a Berserk Fury.
Well, there's something later on which I'm going to have to mention, which is going to kind of gross people out. But like, doesn't Spider-Man say, "Hey, for the record, I saved your life too"? And that's sort of like, you know, why are you? That's sort of, to me, that kind of came off as Spider-Man saying, "Why are you doing this?" And Dr. Octopus not giving him an answer because it's enough to answer.
Yeah, well, but what I'm saying is, you know, basically Dr. Octopus sort of led on that, yeah, or I guess it's because we've been watching, so we're sort of the audience, so we know quick pro quo, but I felt he kind of led on, yeah, Spider-Man could, maybe he's talking about all those supervillains I've been fighting. Was he behind him? Norman responsible for him?
I don't know. I mean, well, here's the thing, though. After Dr. Octopus escapes from Oscorp and goes back to his home and decides that he gets the needs the power source, he says he needs a power source to do what?
Destroy Norman.
I mean, I know he needs to maintain his tentacles, but then it's like, I mean, I don't understand what to me the accent just makes him a villain. It doesn't alter his brain waves. It doesn't just fuse the tentacles to his body, even though it does do that. It mainly turns him into a villain. And I think there were better ways to do it, which I think that they kind of jumped the boat on.
Well, with that being said, let's talk about that second fight. I call it the Coney Island fight, but really, the fight that started in Octavius's old place of work and led to Coney Island. So what did you think of that fight?
I liked it, though. I liked the fight. I thought, like I said, the animation was really good, and I liked how Spider-Man kind of, like, he... Well, some of the things he did were kind of juvenile, like throwing candy apples at him, but other things, like wrapping around his tentacles and having him fall down, were pretty fun. And I thought generally the fight was pretty okay.
And it was a fun fight, and I think what really helped make it better was a lot of the jokes that were put in, like the candy apples. Like, Spider-Man, I can't remember if he was standing up and he got hit, or he was thrown against it, and then something got thrown against him when he was against the backdrop that said, hit the free.
Yeah, that was a good
point. I mean, it's a gag. And you know what? It works. There's so many good lines that we could quote. I picked, like, probably, because we're going to say about, I have 6 lines to say when we get to our favorite lines.
Good lord, man.
But it's like, I don't know if you got Family Guy out of this, but, you know, Flash Thompson, where he saves Flash Thompson, says, hey, you're not pretty enough to save twice. It's like, it just, I felt it was kind of this, like, one pro quo away from being, everybody gets one.
That's kind of a roundabout way to look at it. I like the line, but looking at it harder than
minutes.
Well, that doesn't mean it's exclusive. I'm not gonna say that you can't.
I mean, I guess I've just seen that episode way too much that,
I thought for sure you would mention the very beginning where he went, like, she saves the 2 people who are like the dude with the glasses and the hot chick. He's like, thank you later, dude. That's why she didn't mention
that. I'm gonna wait till line to actually talk about that, but yeah. Throughout a lot of the episode, there's a lot of good footage. That is actually one of, I actually don't have that on my favorite lines, but I did want to mention that as an honorable mention. Because it's like, dude, you can thank me later. Right. What's that scene? It's actually very unrealistic. Really, technically, you think a hot girl like her would be blushing.
Yeah.
If tied to a geek like that. If there's anything wrong with
the geek. Yeah, well, I just see them as blushing for different reasons. It's just they're so close to each other. But never mind. Let's go ahead.
Oh, was that the sick thing you were going to bring up?
No.
You heard it here first, folks. But moving on, let's talk about the relationship with Peter Parker, because we had sort of several for relationship type of deals going down. First, we had sort of a clarification of what the relationship, right, at least right now, is between Mary Jane.
Yes, we did, Thomas.
That they're just friends right now. Well, I never said that they were hopelessly in love, but there was something there. And I did add to the point, especially last episode, if you go back and listen, that it's not something that really gets clarified in these first 2 seasons. Not to jump ahead too much. But it throughout these 2 seasons...
I think that's all clarification.
But there's way she acts that... it's very difficult to tell, I think.
Well, I don't think it is, because if you know Mary Jane's initial reaction to, I hesitate to spoil anything, but if you know why Mary Jane acts the way she does, then it explains why she does that. And I think that why you think she's acting that way is different from why I think she's acting that way. Even for the same reason, I think the way she's acting, I think we think she's acting a little differently. I don't know if that makes any sense, but,
Yeah. But for right now, that Mary Jane's probably gonna be the closest thing that Peter Parker has to a friend, at least in upcoming episodes. And it's probably going to be sort of his emotional support, I think, in the upcoming episodes.
I don't know about that, because...
Or at least that's that's how they're setting her up.
I think her emotional support is a little strong, because, like, he hides secrets from everybody, and I know he doesn't have Eddie, he won't have Harry, and he'll, you know, be with Liz. I see what you're getting, but I think calling her emotional support is a little... too strong of language, but I'm not, you know, again, it's
what maybe not emotional support. What's the word maybe I should use? Sort of, I don't want to say wise sage, because that sounds wrong.
That sounds funny. I like that. Mary Jane, the wise sage. You've come to me for questions on life, Tiger.
But it is the thing of, like, you know, when he sort of needs help, that's who it feels like he's going to be going to.
Right.
Being
where he finds himself.
Where you have both Liz, I feel like Liz and Gwen are being upgraded to sort of romantic interest status. And I think that makes Mary Jane actually a great character, or at least it builds her character through this series. And it's actually one of the things I like, is that they focus more on the friendship, at least for these past, not to get too far ahead, we'll talk about it again, of course, but the friendship part in these first 2 seasons. I do think that there's something more to it, but I think the reason why I think there's something more to it is because I think it's strengthened by the fact that that friendship is there first.
I think that she genuinely, I think she wants to be his friend to be his friend and to sort of not get close to people as she tends not to want to do.
Well, if we ever get a third season, we'll get a confirmation on that, I think, finally.
Okay.
With that, let's talk about one more thing relationship-wise. Let's talk about sort of the declining relationship between Peter, Gwen, and Harry. Or should I say friendship, because you have Harry sort of going off on his own, sort of like trading in them for the it crowd. You have Peter doing his thing, and Gwen sort of left holding the bag, really.
Yeah, Gwen's kind of, yeah, she sort of is shorter than a stick. And like, I think this and the next episode both, it's kind of the same thing where she literally is like kind of alone in several scenes.
Yeah.
And Harry's like, it's okay. We gotta hang out. It's been a while. Come on, Gwen. Like, that was really good voice acting by James Earl Taylor, by the way.
Yeah.
Also, if we're talking about relationships, it must be said that this is really what sets, we're getting on the road to where Peter is, going to be with Liz Allen.
Oh, yeah. And it's the start of
it. Yeah. And I liked it because I thought that, since they kind of blew the thing with Betty, and the thing they did with Liz was, pretty inspired. Because I don't think in the comics, it wasn't as full and strong as that. They were kind of going back and forth. So what they were doing here was good stuff. And, you mentioned that he, like, accidentally tried to wipe her face with the Spider-Man mask. Did you catch the gag that he won her an octopus?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This episode really tries to be cute sometimes.
There's really nothing wrong with it trying to do that.
Well, the movie references, but we've already talked about that.
Yeah. As far as last things that I think we're going to talk about, let's talk about the Goblin Red Herrings. Because we do have a couple. We have Harry. We have Norman.
And we have Sally Avril.
Yeah.
As Bertoni mentioned last episode.
But, you know, we don't know what Sally's been doing. We really haven't.
Well, I mean, it's kind of a bleak and illicit. Well, not really, but it's kind of like a subtle appearance. Like, you kind of see his arm, and then, like, the end, you see him on the camera. What do you think the goblin is supposed to, like, at this point, without saying anything, what do you think the goblin's goals are?
Well, we don't know, because outside of wanting to take over Manhattan.
Oh, yeah. All five.
But, you know, he's really pushing to try to take Tombstone's territory. But, you know.
There's a lot of dialogue at the end where Hammerhead talks, like, or either Hammerhead or Osmond talk about, like, he's messing up with their technology or something.
Yeah.
Do you remember what that was?
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm going to tell you right now, it is a thing of, you know, it does kind of actually look like it might be Sally. You know, the goblin, you know, again, we talked about it somewhat a different thing. It kind of looks a little feminine. And, you know, really, if you look at it, why would Osborn be trying to ruin a business deal, a great business deal, where creates supervillain for Tombstone and then builds the cells for the villains to keep them? And then Harry really knows nothing about the operation, so why would he care? And we really don't know anything yet about Sally's history.
That's true.
So there are some clues that it could be her, and, you know, that would be a great twist. And different from the comics, if it does turn out to be Sally. You know, yeah. I'm 75% sure that it's Sally.
Well, both have, you know, irritating high-pitched voices, you know.
Yeah.
I'm a green goblin, a geek!
Well, you never know. That dumb blonde could just be a front for how really intelligent she is. She's ultra-intelligent.
I agree. You never know. You will never know what is behind the mind of Sally Avril, and it could be something far more greater than you've ever seen.
True. So, moving on to our last part, we're going to talk about our favorite lines. I have six, but I'll let Don go first.
You know, I don't have six, but I have, I really like the line where he's like, he holds Spider-Man against the wall, yeah, and he says, Whoa, Doc, what are you doing? He says something like, you know, next time you run into other Spider-Men,
I got the line for you. Look, Doc, you think this through? The next Spider-Man who finds you under a pile of debris might view this as a cautionary tale.
Right, thanks.
I haven't written down, okay. Which is sad. I know.
Nah, I've seen sadder.
So is that it?
I do like the line where I know you already have it, where like, you know, he was like, so and so, like took the toilet to Coney Island this much.
Wait, don't.
I'm gonna let you say it. So yeah, I'm done.
Yeah, but like I said, six. I said actually the one that you said before, that was action number two. Because I went in order of when they appeared. Number one, I had the car chase scene. Him going, really, this is how we're gonna play it. I don't know. I just thought that was funny. I guess you thought that was cliche.
Yes.
Number three, the ratio of arms to insanity hasn't been established either.
Yeah, good quip.
him throwing a go, do you ever shut up? Sorry, no. My fans expect a certain amount of quibbage in every battle.
Yeah, that was. I remember Brad on the crossface and he would like that line.
Yeah, there's the candle, like, hand over the device, you pathetic four limbed excuse for a spider! Oh, you sweet talker, you.
Yeah.
And of course, I think we both agree, this is probably the best line of the episode. Subway to Coney Island, $2. Riding Turbulence, $6. Saving Liz Allen, priceless.
Oh, actually, I did think of a line that, I don't know if it's really a good line, but it's the one that I remember. When Dr. Octopus grabs Liz, holds her like closely and says, you know, something like, you know, oh, I got it now. You're weak. You care about other people. And like, I don't know what the line was, but it was really sinister comparing when you consider the fact that he has a girl in his testicles.
It was like, you know, I should have noticed it earlier, your weakness for saving people, or something like
right.
that.
Right. It was. This is a fail on my part. I should go back and like write it down, but it was something. It was a really sinister line, especially considering what was going on. Did he say a line when he was holding Mary Jane and Gwen at the same time?
He says, "I can get used to this," and then he follows it up and said. You know, as much as I enjoy the company, I have a doctor's appointment to keep.
Yeah, I like that. That was a great line. I could get used to this. That was awesome.
So, that's it. Actually, before we do ratings, I do want to say we do notice that we actually forgot to say ratings last episode.
We did. Oops. I thought we did, but I guess we didn't.
We didn't. We were having too much fun, so... What we're going to do is we're going to actually give our ratings for the past two episodes. So, Don, say your rating for episode 7 and then episode 8.
The last episode, I gave it a 5 because I liked it just as much as the Ryan episode. I thought that was a really cool episode. With this, you know, like I said before, I think my thought process has changed a little bit with this episode. I think in my initial review for the Crawl Space, I didn't justify the parts I did like. And even this one, I don't think I did. The animation is great. There's a lot of really good dialogue all around. I think the action's pretty good. I still don't buy Dr. Octopus's reasonings or motivations, but Peter McNichol did a really, really good job voicing him.
Yeah, we really didn't talk about Peter McNichol, and I feel bad for that. He did a great job voicing Dr. Octopus.
He really did, and he really sold like the dialogue, like the continued dialogue really, really well. So I'm going to bump up my original score and give this a 4.
I think I'm going to agree. 5 out of 5 for episode 7. It was an absolutely incredible episode. And yeah, I'll give this a 4. And for all intents and purposes, it's a 4 because of a lot of the banter in this episode. Just really makes this, for me, a lovable episode.
Well, if you don't mind me asking, was there anything preventing it for you to give it a 5?
A lot of the same problems I think maybe you had, you know, I sort of see the same things. But more due to the fact that this kind of felt like a filler episode. It's a fun episode, I enjoy watching it, it got a lot of great banter, but it does feel like a filler episode.
I disagree, because in the fact that Dr. Octopus is introduced, who is such an iconic Spider-Man villain, I don't think you can call that a filler episode.
Yeah, but we've also talked other episodes where we've had the introduction of characters filler.
Well, there were, you know, it was the Sandman. Who cares about him?
But, you know, so a 5 and then a 4 out of me too. So that's it for this episode. As usual, we plug our stuff. So, of course, I have the Tokyo SOS podcast, the Godzilla podcast. We've just recorded episode 3. We do also have a special episode, a special April Fool's episode that really, check it out. It's actually pretty funny.
Ooh.
And Don has a new podcast that's Spider-Man related too.
Oh yeah, because all the shows I'm on are Spider-Man related. I mentioned gratuitously before, me, our past guests Bertone and John Wilson have teamed up to do ASM Classics. Episode 3 just came out recently too, where we went over the first appearance of both Dr. Octopus and Sandman in issues Amazing Spider-Man number 3 and 4, and next time we'll go over his appearances in Strange Tales, and I believe issues 5 and 6, so look out for that. I'm also on Clone Saga Chronicles, where we just went over the Mark of Cain and the final issue of the Clone Saga miniseries, and be on the lookout for episodes to come, basically.
So, and as usual, we also plug our friends. So we're going to plug Brad Douglas and the Spider-Man Cross Piece that wasn't on the front page. You know, awesome. Episode 100 is coming. It's actually going to be on the 12th. If you go to the Spider-Man Crawl Space, I don't know if this will be out before then. It probably won't be. It'll probably actually be almost a month since it. So, but episode 100 is coming as of this recording. So do check out the front page. Michael Bailey's Views from the Long Box. He now has episode 101 finally up after 2 months. And he has four more in the can ready. So Mike may actually have a month where he has a Views from the Long Box podcast out every week. Awesome! We have the Shaft podcast, the super happy anime fun time podcast by my friends Chris and Gene, and I also provide content for that podcast, Thomas's Prerogative, which you can find every Monday. You have the Major Spoilers podcast and the Critical Hit podcast. Both are great. Check it out. Clone Saga Chronicles with our friend Bertone, Beetle, and Spidey Dude. You have Batgirl the Oracle, a Batgirl Chronicles podcast.
Barbara Gordon
podcast, so yeah. By our good friend Stella. We have Kaiju Cast. By my good friend Kyle Yost, that's another Godzilla podcast, and along with other giant rubber monster foes. A new one that we're going to start suggesting now is Nostalgia Critic.
because Thomas hasn't seen that guy before until recently. So.
Yeah, I mean, the past like month and a half, I've been watching his videos. They're absolutely hilarious. And if the first one you need to watch, you have to watch his Batman and Robin review. It will kill you. I mean, every time I watch it, I'm on the floor hurting because I'm laughing so hard. And then, of course, our last one, we're going to, the 2-in-1 showcase. So, go check those podcasts out.
I'd like to mention two others, real quick. Just, Comic Tube with, Leroy. Burning Comics / Burning Talking Points / Basic Comic Nation / Breaking the Comics / 5 Questions with Walter Bonham. He's been really showing these out, and they've all been really, really good listens. So.
Yeah, the man that has to do a podcast every night.
Oh, yeah.
So that's it. Do you want to tell them where people can find the show, Don? And its forums?
They can find us in all places. If you find us, initially, just go to SpectacularWebsPodcast@Podomatic.com. You can also find this on SpiderManCrawlSpace.com because I tend to put the episodes up on there. You can find us go down to the comic forums to find the episodes and leave feedback at thecomicsforums.com. And that,
I think on iTunes.
Search us out on iTunes and give us some reviews.
Yeah, you can find us on iTunes by searching out Spectacular Webs. So, do you guys remember to leave emails? You can leave emails at spectacularwebs@yahoo.com. And, of course, iTunes reviews. We really want them. Really, it's the only way we're going to get better. It really is. And we really...
Because we're so bad right now.
Yeah. So, that's it for this spectacular episode of the Spectacular Webs podcast. Until next time,
Green Goblin revealed.
Yes, and then after that, a pretty kitty comes to town. And we're going to have fun with that one.
Get ready, people.
So, until next time, Spider-Man fans, stay spectacular.
Living on the edge, body cross, spinning webs, swinging from a higher ledge, he could leap above our heads.